Here's something to think about. Vladimir Putin as Santa Claus?
Искренне рад приветствовать участников и гостей третьего международного форума Арктика территория диалога.
In 2013, at an international Arctic forum, there's the Russian president who seems to present himself as a custodian or caretaker of the North Pole, if not its full-time Christmas resident. Global warming may have complicated the mythology for Santa Claus, but it has made Russian access to a coveted shipping route, the Northeastern Passage, connecting Europe to China, a reality. Russia submitted its very first bid for the Arctic sea shelf back in 2002 to a United Nations committee. It was rejected for lack of evidence. But now the Russians have returned, armed with new geological data, to make an even bigger claim of sovereign territory off their northern coastline. Scott Borgerson is co-founder of Arctic Circle, a nonprofit striving to increase international coordination in the region, and he says global warming has been very good for Russian interests.
The Arctic sea ice is melting really at a radical pace. In fact, in just the past three decades, the sea ice has lost half its area and three-quarters of its total volume.
What evidence do we have that the Russians are really making a play for this suddenly open sea?
Well, they're doing lots of things that involve investing in infrastructure, such as new icebreakers, government bureaucracy trying to open the seaway over the Northeast Passage. But they're also following procedures under the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, of which they're a member and the United States is not, to claim additional territory in the Arctic, which would give them potentially vast new tracts of ocean space. In fact, 1.2 million square kilometers of additional seabed in the Arctic Ocean.
Now, how do you claim ocean space? You can't just plant a flag.
You cannot, although they have done that in the past. That was really just for publicity and less for international law. So this is actually a technical process that's very clearly spelled out in something called the 1982 UN Convention on Law of the Sea that not just Russia, but most countries in the world, in fact, nearly all countries in the world and all the Arctic coastal states, with the exception of the United States, to actually its embarrassment and hurting its national interest in the Arctic, all belong to this treaty. And this treaty has very clear guidelines under something called Article 76 that spell out the technical processes for claiming additional seafloor in the not just the Arctic Ocean, all oceans, if a coastal state can prove that it's connected to its landmass.
And in this particular case, the Russians would get access to the sea lane itself, which they can defend with their naval ships, but also mining rights to what's on the bottom of the ocean?
So yes and no. So they already have access to the sea lanes above Eurasia. That's just part of what it gets under the normal provisions of the treaty. It's the additional space beyond that that comes from proving, in this case, two submarine mountain ridges. Russian scientists are making the case with bathymetric data and submarine geology that these are actually extensions of Eurasia. Whereas others say, well, maybe they're just oceanic crust from tectonic plates coming together. But of course, Canada and Denmark, by virtue of Greenland, have made arguments actually that these are submarine ridges connected to their land masses. Therefore, they should be the ones entitled to the extra space.
Who can adjudicate this? Geologists? Politicians? It seems like, I mean, the world is just the world, you know?
So you're right on both of those. It's actually first a 21-member technical body called the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf. It's part of the United Nations. They review the technical submission by Russia. And what they will determine, as they have for other countries like Norway or in other parts of the world like Australia, whether or not the Russian submission meets the technical guidelines. And if it does, they'll simply say it's not part of the international seabed. But then it's up to Russia to work out with its neighbors exactly where to draw the line on the map.
All right, Scott. So let's say Russia wins everything. They win in every tribunal. They manage to grab as much sea lane as they want. What advantages does this give them in terms of commerce, in terms of strategic ability to control the Arctic, that sort of thing?
So this particular claim, it gives them rights to additional resources in the seabed. Minerals, oil, natural gas, and all the types of things that in a very growing and exciting business, countries and businesses are looking to develop. The reality, however, is that this seafloor that they're claiming is quite far from land. It's still covered by ice much of the time. It's a very remote and hazardous place. And Shell is drilling for oil for the first time this summer off of Alaska. That's very close to shore and is very expensive and difficult to do. So we're talking about parts of the ocean near the North Pole and the North Pole itself, which are so remote and inhospitable still. There's no immediate near-term economic implication, but over the long term, there's certainly potential value there. And I think symbolically, especially for the North Pole, this conceivably could be very important.
Taking oil and gas out of it, I remember there was discussion that on the seabed in the Arctic, there are all these nodules of rare earth elements that could be of extraordinary strategic importance.
Absolutely. Deep seabed mining is a growing industry, and we actually know more about the surface of the moon than we do about the deep oceans. And so the oceans are really a frontier, not just for minerals, but for new medicines, from the bioprospecting from deep beneath the ocean seafloor, from all sorts of natural resources that really scientists are only beginning to understand the great and just awesome potential our oceans can deliver.
So you're trying to help us understand the Arctic maybe a little better than we understand the moon, right?
Well, I do my part. I think Americans in the lower 48 forget just how big and close the Arctic is. So Texans are fond of saying everything's bigger in Texas, but that's actually not true. Alaska is 2.5 times the size of Texas. The Arctic's massive, and it's vast in its natural resources. And climate change is happening in the Arctic faster than anywhere else. This is not a sort of a scientific sort of fiction story about what might happen tomorrow. It's happening today with profound political but also economic implications for all of us here in the lower 48.
Scott Borgerson is co-founder of Arctic Circle, a nonprofit striving to increase international coordination and knowledge about the Arctic. Thanks so much, Scott.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.